Welcome to episode number 18 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about brachial plexus palsies, local drains, and positive and negative feedback loops. The local drinks part's not so bad, but my shit sounds dry sometimes.
Watch your mouth. I don't want to have to put the explicit marker on this podcast.
My fecal sounds dry sometimes. My fecal sounds like it lacks lots of bile.
And with that, let's just get started.
One of my favorite things about going to med school and learning more is how nerdy some of our jokes are getting.
Oh my gosh, I was in the car with you and some of your med school friends, and I was like, you guys are so cool.
but it is exciting to my whole thought process has been changing, and I find myself asking why so much more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll let it go for now because we are always a little long on time anyhow, but maybe we should do how med school has changed my mind.
Oh yeah, that's maybe a good idea.
Maybe I'll write that sometime. Anyway, what are we starting with? Brachial plexus palsies?
Yes.
So, do you know what your brachial plexus is? Do you know what a plexus is?
No.
Okay, so a plexus is just a bundle of, tissue. So you can have a capillary plexus, so like a blood vessel plexus. You can have a lymphatic plexus, where you have a bunch of lymph nodes and lymph capillaries together. But what we're talking about is a brachial plexus, which is all nerves.
Okay.
So it's essentially like the system of nerves that comes out of it's C5 through T1, those spinal roots. All those spinal nerves come out, and then they crisscross, and they'll meet together, and they'll separate, and they'll branch together.
Like in your back?
Like all up in your shoulder.
Oh, okay.
Like by your trapezius, not even your shoulder, like in your arm yet. By the time it gets to your arm, it's crisscrossed quite a bit, and it has given off a number of branches already. And then we get down to five major nerves for your arm.
Okay.
So it's done quite a bit.
Yeah.
So that's what a brachial plexus is. And because of where it's located and how close it is to so many bone structures and stuff like that, it's fairly easily damaged. So it's kind of a big one that they really want you to know about.
Sure.
In fact, I can draw the brachial plexus from memory.
Yes.
How cool is that? And it never comes up on Pictionary. I don't even remember the last time we played Pictionary. Okay, so we're talking about brachial plexus, so that's all the nerves that, for our purposes, this is all the nerves that innervate your arm.
Okay.
Skin, so both muscle and skin is like sensory stuff, and then that also includes your hand, because it's all down the road from your arm. So a palsy, do you know what, I'm sure you've heard the word before.
Yeah.
It's usually refers to some type of paralysis.
Uh-huh.
Of just a nerve or a set of nerves, you know, and it's sometimes accompanied with weakness or loss of feeling, that you know, you lose control of your body movements, and there's some uncontrolled body movements because the nerves aren't dead, they're just damaged.
Okay.
And so you can get tremors or shaking.
Sure, shakes in your hands.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So we're talking about brachial plexus, so we're talking arm stuff, and we're talking about palsies, so loss of movement from injury and stuff like that, right?
Okay.
Okay, so there's two really big ones for us to talk about. The first one is the Erb's palsy. And I always wonder to myself, who names trauma after themselves?
Oh, this is the guy that
There's a lot of syndromes, even congenital birth defects, that are named after the doctor who found it.
Yeah.
There's some pretty rough things that people have to deal with, you know, as far as like congenital birth defects, like at what point do you go, oh man, this is terrible, this disease, I'm going to name it after me.
Fair.
So Erb's palsy is, so the brachial plexus goes from C5 to T1, right? All those spinal cords.
Sure.
Okay. Erb's palsy is a damage to just the upper part of that. So C5, C6. And so with all the branches and back and forth that happens, that involves damage to your suprascapular nerve, which is your infraspinatus and supraspinatus. That's the muscles on your back, mm-hmm. like on your shoulder blade.
Okay.
So those are rotator cuff muscles.
Oh, okay.
Musculocutaneous nerve, which is all your arm flexors, like your biceps. That's all innervated by the musculocutaneous nerve. And then the lateral part, the outside part of your forearm, that skin, that's innervated by musculocutaneous.
Okay.
Okay. The axillary nerve, which, do you know that axillary means like armpit, basically?
No, but it's good to know.
It is, yeah. So the axillary nerve does like your deltoid.
Okay.
And it does your teres minor, which is another rotator cuff. And it does the, so you know that your triceps has three different heads to it, like three different parts that it attaches to.
Oh.
That's why it's called the triceps. Yeah, no, like there's no reason for you to know that.
No.
You know. So it does one of the long heads of the triceps. So just damaging the C5, C6, look at all the different muscles that are and parts of our body, of our arm, that are already going to have problems.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a pretty widespread here. We're talking all the way from muscles of your back to the skin of your forearm.
Right. That's a lot.
That is a lot. So Erb's palsy, like I said, C5, C6, so it's kind of high up on your neck. So you'll see, like, if someone falls and hits their neck on the ground. Like, so if you turn your head one way and your shoulder kind of down, how you could see it actually hitting your neck, you know. But what happens more often is that as a fetus is delivered, it's in too tight of a canal. And so it can pull the shoulder and the neck kind of separately. And it's a little bit, not always a malpractice thing, but sometimes if a doctor has just the head and he's trying to coax the baby out, he could pull too hard and cause Erb's palsy.
Okay.
So the way this presents is they call it the waiter's tip. Do you, and I don't go to fancy enough places that this connected for me right away, but you know that, like, so put your arm down by your side,
mm-hmm.
medially rotate it, so rotate it in, and then flex your hand so that it's sticking out.
Oh.
So it's like a waiter trying to get a tip, like, motion for a tip.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't do that at buffets. So that is
true. And I think that waiters don't really do that very much anymore.
No.
Like, we've gotten a lot more casual.
Yeah. And maybe in like really, really fancy places, but.
Yeah.
Oh, so they call it the waiter's tip. It's arm adducted, immediately rotated and wrist flexed. This is something that comes up a lot. So I was curious and, because it depending on how bad the damage is to the nerves, it doesn't necessarily heal.
Sure.
Your arm could be stuck like that forever and ever. You know who has Erb's palsy?
No.
Martin Sheen.
Really?
Yeah. So his got better, but he has that condition in the left arm, and it left a difference in length and range of movement.
Huh.
And I haven't watched it since I read this, but... apparently in Apocalypse Now, you can really tell. If you know to look for it.
If you know to look for it, yeah. Because otherwise you wouldn't...
Yeah, you wouldn't know. So if you ever watch Apocalypse Now again, which is a fantastic movie...
Yeah. I don't think I've seen it since high school.
I don't know the last time, yeah. But yeah, I mean, look for it. So then the other one is Klumpke's palsy. So we did the upper trunk. Now we're just going to do the lower trunk. And there's a lot more than these. These are just the
kind of main ones.
The main ones that get brought up. The lower roots are the C8 and the T1. Now, I know, I see that look on your face. You're thinking, Micah, how can we have a C8? There's only 7 cervical vertebrae.
That's what exactly I was going to say.
Is it really?
No.
Okay. So cervical spinal cords, when we say C8 and T1, we're actually talking about the spinal cords that are exiting, right? So cervical spinal cords, we only have 7. They exit above and the rest exit
below.
So there's like this discrepancy where there's extra spinal cord. There's an extra spinal cord essentially that gets released between C8 and T1.
Okay.
Or C7 and T1. But we can't call it C7 because C7 is exiting above. And T1 is exiting below. So we call it C8.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So this one, the hand is basically just turned in and held at the chest.
Oh yeah, you see that. I feel like you see this one more often.
Yeah, it seems to be a lot more common. And it gives a type of claw hand because we're also talking ulnar damage, which does the intrinsic muscles of the hand. So that's like your interossei, which are between all the metacarpals. Some thenar muscles, which are your thumb, and some hyperthenar muscles, which are your pinky. So you get kind of a claw hand. And it also does some of the flexors at the wrist, so it's a little extended then. Because so you have wrist flexors on the front and wrist extensors on the back.
Sure.
Okay. So when a muscle gets paralyzed in a situation like that, say you paralyze all the extensors, is your wrist going to be stuck extended or stuck flexed?
Well, it'll be the opposite.
It's the opposite. Because all those flexors are still pulling.
Pulling.
But the extensors aren't. And then you can't lift to counteract that. But yeah, so it gets turned in. And this is another one that can be caused by traumatic childbirth. That if they come out of the canal wrong. And this is like pulling on. Like if just the arm comes out first, and they pull on that arm to try and get the baby out, you can cause this damage.
Yeah.
In the clinical vignettes that we do, like for the study questions and everything, the for adults, they often talk about someone falling from a tree and grabbing a limb to catch themselves and doing damage to themselves like this.
Oh.
That it then pulls.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been in a situation like that either. I've definitely fallen from trees, but I've never fallen from a tree where I was able to catch myself one-handed.
I don't have well enough developed muscles to be able to have that even be an option.
That's
like, I don't even think I could go to a child's jungle gym and hold my entire body weight. Like,
one-handed?
Yeah, definitely not if I was, like, falling.
Right.
I'd be like, I'm falling, like, would be my first
thing. Yeah, when we were at the salt pond.
Uh-huh.
Up by Fancy, the water like crashed over the rocks, and it was pushing us off the rocks, and I was holding on with one hand as the water was like pushing me back, and I totally thought, I wonder how long till I give myself Cone-Fuse palsy.
Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. All right, Micah.
All right,
a couple weeks ago, we talked about local foods.
Yeah.
As promised, these are local drinks.
Sounds good.
Drink. But there's quite a few non-alcoholic local drinks. And then, so I'll start with those and then I'll get into the alcoholic beverages.
Could do a two-parter.
All right. I'll do a two-parter. I'm going to talk about the local drinks that are non-alcoholic.
Cool.
All right. So there is a company on the island called Hyroon. They do both beer and soft drinks.
Yeah.
And these are the soft drinks. There is Mobby. And Mobby is a bark. And you can make Mobby two different ways. But they have a processed Mobby that Hyroon makes. And it kind of tastes like black licorice.
Mm. I've actually not tried it yet, which is weird because I like black licorice.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little nervous to like get a full bottle and then decide I don't like it and then have wasted it.
You'll be okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll drink it?
I'd finish. I like it.
Okay.
There's bitter lemon. It's kind of like Sprite.
Yeah, but like kind of squirt in a way.
Oh, I could see that. Bitter lemon, what I like, it's got little bits of lemon in the bottom.
Mm.
Yeah. Cola champagne, which is one I don't like.
Yeah, that's not for me.
It is red. It kind of tastes like Swedish fish, but it also kind of tastes like rose water.
Yeah. It does not taste like cola at all.
No. And it's cola with a K.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't taste like champagne either.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's lemon lime, which is not like Sprite or 7-Up. It is like Mountain Dew, but it's not caffeinated.
Yeah, which is odd.
Yeah. So
it's all right, though.
It's like, all right, yeah.
Yeah.
But for me, it's the most like chemically one, the most chemically tasty one, kind of like how
that's why it's like Mountain Dew.
Yeah, because it kind of tastes super chemically.
Yeah.
Then there's cocktail, which I think is delightful.
Yeah, I do like the cocktail one.
And cocktail tastes like, remember that tin of fruit cocktail that you got when you were a kid? It had like one cherry in it.
Yep.
And you like, it's got like a pull tab on it. Yep. And then you open it up. It tastes like if you put that in a blender.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Cocktail also has, like, little bits of pulp in the bottom.
Yeah.
And these are all effervescent. They're all carbonated.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But none of them are caffeinated, right?
None of them are caffeinated.
And for the most part, they're made from actual, fruits and...
Yeah.
I mean, it's fairly legit.
Yeah. Tons of sugar, though.
Yeah, tons
of sugar. Each of them are really, really sweet. I don't know the, like, calorie content of any of them.
I don't think it's printed on
it. It's not.
Which is also weird.
But they're really sweet. You can, you know, feel it as you're drinking it. There's also... Hyrian also makes a ginger ale, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't write it. I forgot. They make an orange soda.
Yeah, actually, I like the orange soda quite a bit. Usually, I opt for the Hyrian orange because it tastes most like the pop that I know.
Yeah.
I'm not a big pop guy, but I've found that since I've been here, I find myself craving junk food more because I can't get it.
Sure.
You know, like, I kind of really want some McDonald's, and I don't even really care for McDonald's or Burger King or whatever. Like, I could go for that right now.
I've been craving...
And there is something special about, because I can get proper Coke.
Uh-huh.
Every once in a while, I'll get a proper Coke, and that's kind of fantastic.
I've been, like, kind of craving a Diet Coke.
Oh,
which
weird.
Is terrible and weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you straight up can't get them.
No. No. And this is stuff that we never really ate or drank back home.
No.
So why are we craving
I have no
that,
clue.
You know?
There's still a few more Hyrian soft drinks that exist. So we left off at ginger ale, which is a super solid ginger ale.
Yeah.
Then they have a tonic water, which is a tonic water. I actually haven't tasted that one, but I'm sure it tastes just like tonic water. And then they have a soda water, and then there's Vitamalt.
Wait, what's the difference between tonic water and soda water?
Oh, soda water is just water, and then tonic water has got, like, sugar and quinine in it.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, used so you don't get malaria.
Yeah.
And then
you know what else you can use to not get you malaria?
Bug spray.
Sickle cell anemia.
That's true. all right, and then there's Vitamalt, which I think is disgusting.
Yeah, our very first time here, the people that brought us, because women drinking in bars is not super, super common in, like, the village.
Yeah.
And so we went to our very first night here, the people that picked us up from the airport, who were super, super gracious, took us to one of the local rum shops so we could grab a quick burger. And they were like, oh, Micah, you should have a beer. I was like, yeah, I'll have a beer. And Jen, you should have a Vitamalt. And we were thinking it was like another type of beer.
No, it tastes like non-alcoholic beer.
But all the bad parts of non-alcoholic
beer.
Yeah,
and then it's got like...
the beer-tasting parts.
Yeah, it's got like B-complex in it, too. Like, it's supposed to like give you healthy energy after work. I'm like, this is...
It's, yeah. I mean, people at school like it.
This just makes me mad. That's the kind of energy it gives me. It just gives me anger.
Anger.
But a lot of people like it.
Yeah.
Like, even some of your students that go to school with you like it.
Yeah, I just said that.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was just thinking about how mad I was.
That's fair.
Other other non-alcoholic drinks that happen, people will make what's called local juice. And it's all varieties of different things that, of different fruits that happen. There's sorrel, which is like this little seed pod, and it's red, and it kind of makes something that tastes like tea. There's something called golden apple that I think seems like part of the mango family because it's got the similar sort of pit to it. There's people will make local mabi, and that's when you just take the mabi bark and soak it like a tea, and then you add star anise to it.
Yeah.
People do like lime juice, but it's really like a limeade. So all of these things, we make them at the restaurant. All of these things.
Seaweed tea.
Yeah. You take these things, you kind of brew it like a tea, or you take the fruit and you kind of, you know, mash it up and pulverize it, and then you add a heinous amount of sugar.
Right. But that's kind of their like modus operandi for any kind of drink.
Or I mean, sweets, even, or like, yeah, like
coffee.
Yeah.
It's basically no coffee.
I've been making some of these local juices at work, and I'm like, oh, okay, that should be good. And then they look at me like, who are you?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I'm putting sugar into this, like, container, and I don't understand how this much sugar can possibly dissolve in this much water.
Right.
It blows my mind. But, I mean, they're good. But I can't drink more than, like, you know, 4 ounces at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So, also, really popular coconut water. People bottle it and package it, but you can go to a coconut water guy on the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can just buy the coconut.
Yeah, and they'll hack it open for you and give you a straw, which I think is super great. Nature's Gatorade. Chocolate tea. So they'll ask you what kind of tea you want, and an appropriate answer could be coffee or chocolate. Which is a hot chocolate, but they have this local chocolate that they do grow cocoa beans on island, and they make these like little logs, and you dissolve them in water with salt and more sugar, of course, and you top it off with a little milk, and it's amazing.
Mm.
I've got some. I can't believe I haven't made this for you yet.
No, you haven't.
Mm, maybe tonight. And then that's it right now for non-alcoholic local beverages. Drink it. We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
All right, so we're running out of time, so I really we're gonna jump through this one as much as we can. We're talking about feedback systems in the body.
Okay.
So feedback systems, that's basically how your body tells itself what it needs to do, right?
Sure.
We split it up into the stimulus, the sensor, the control, the effector. So the stimulus is that there's some sort of change in your system.
Okay.
Okay. So this could be that your body temperature increased.
So it gets hot here, like that? Like, I'm outside,
more than
really hot.
Your body temperature has increased.
Oh, okay.
Inside your body.
Okay.
Because your body temperature can increase for non external reasons.
Okay.
Okay. So then there's the sensor, which detects the change. So all over your body, you have thermoreceptors that see what's going on, you know, and they say, oh, the body temperature has gone up, and it sends a signal back to a part of your brain that regulates body temperature, right? So that's the sensor. The control is what it does, the response to the change, the controller. So in this case, the temperature regulators are sort of the control, because they're going to start sending that brain part. They're going to start sending signals out to make a change, right?
Okay.
And the last is the effector, and that's the effect of the response, and that's for your sweat glands to start working.
Sure.
So we've got increase in body temperature. You detect it, your brain decides what to do, and it sends out signals to your sweat glands to open up and start sweating. So
all without you making any physical, like, any choices.
Yeah, right? This is all involuntary. So that's a feedback system. Like, that's a very basic feedback system. And we have positive and negative feedback systems. And really what we're doing here is I want to lay this down because we're going to be talking about some endocrine things coming up. And so that knowing this is going to help understand how endocrine system stuff works.
Okay.
So there's positive examples of feedback. And positive examples, basically you get a feedback loop that something's happened and we want that to keep happening. Okay. So for example, clotting. You have a cut, the platelets come along and they start latching on to where that break is to start forming a platelet plug.
Yeah.
And as they latch,
I was there for the clotting episode.
So as they latch on, they release a signal that calls more platelets to that area.
Sure.
Okay, so then the more platelets come to that area, they latch on to help form the platelet plug. That latching on causes them to release a hormone or a signal to bring more platelets to the area.
Bring more platelets to the party.
Yeah, those platelets come to the area, they attach to that plug, that causes them to release signals, bring platelets to there. So that's a positive feedback, because you see how it just keeps growing and growing and growing. Childbirth, the same thing happens. Oxytocin stimulates uterine contractions. Okay, so oxytocin causes your uterus to start to contract. Guess what your uterus can release when it starts to contract?
Oxytocin?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Positive feedback loop. So the more it contracts, the more oxytocin it releases. The more oxytocin it releases, the more it's being told to contract.
Sure.
So that's a positive feedback loop. It causes like a big like reaction to something. It amplifies whatever your response is. So we don't see it as something that happens very routinely. It's more of a response mechanism.
Sure.
Okay, so now on the flip side of that, we have negative feedback. Negative feedback is like an inhibitory thing. So this is saying, whoa, 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 not so much, or slow down, or don't do that. So this is more like where we would have homeostasis, because it's much more about creating a balance. So things like temperature, you have to keep a consistent temperature. pH, you have to keep a consistent pH in your body. Hormone levels, things like that. So like for blood sugar rises, and that makes the pancreas release insulin until the blood sugar comes back down.
Okay.
So that's negative feedback.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't grow and grow and grow. It's this happens and this goes to bring it back to normal.
So it brings it into that balance, that range that it wants to be in. I think a really good example, or maybe a better example, would be like spermatogenesis. So the creation of sperm in men. Your pituitary gland releases FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, and luteinizing hormone, LH. So a couple of hormones that go down to start up spermatogenesis, right? They go down there and they stimulate cells that make testosterone. And one of those is Sertoli cells. That's stimulated by luteinizing hormone. Okay?
Okay.
So one of the things, so Sertoli cells releases testosterone, and one of the other things that it releases is something called inhibin. Inhibin.
Probably inhibit something.
Right?
Yes!
I know. Naming is so incredibly clever in medicine. So inhibin goes back
up.
I think
we've talked about that before.
We have a little podcast, bit, yeah. It goes back up and is negative feedback for FSH, so it slows down the production of the hormones that cause spermatogenesis. So the hormones that cause spermatogenesis also cause the hormones that stop spermatogenesis.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, because that look and that response is sometimes the look you give when you're not really listening. There are definitely times recording this I look over at you and you're like contemplating your belly button.
It's true. I am kind of hungry.
So, but the idea is that the action also causes the inhibition of the action.
Sure.
So it doesn't ever run away with itself.
Yeah. Keeps itself in check.
Yeah. So that's
some reins.
Yeah, that's positive and negative feedback. Really not terribly complicated concepts, but maybe something we don't normally think about, and really important for us to understand to be able to talk about hormones and things like that.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, there you have it. This was episode 18, Brachial Plexus Palsies, Non-Alcoholic Local Drinks, and Feedback Loops. Hope you join us next week for episode 19. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.